Hello, everyone. This is the Gunfelt and Gadowski Sports Podcast. My name is Ruan Gunfelt, and I'm a high school freshman.
My name is Matthew Gadowski, and I'm also a high school freshman.
Today, we're just going to go over the latest events in the world of sports, which includes leagues trying to reopen due to the coronavirus, the upcoming NFL draft, and the Last Dance, which is the Michael Jordan documentary scheduled to air the first of 10 parts tonight. All right, so first off, the main thing that's been going on lately is the coronavirus and how leagues are attempting to reopen. We touched on this a lot last week, and since that meeting, we have had a few new developments. A few states, including Florida, have declared sports as essential, meaning that that games can resume there if needed, and so that could be an option if the NBA or the MLB wanted to play all its games there. And some states, such as California, have declared such gatherings off limits. So what do you think would be the best? Do you think it would be a good idea for them to start reopening playing games in Florida?
I think it really depends on how many people are going to be in attendance and how many people are going to be within the arena. I think if they have available testing and of the resources available to make sure everyone maintains good health during the events, I'm totally in on it. But if there's no testing and there's way too many people for how the virus spreads, if there's so many people in close contact, I definitely don't think it's worth it. I do think, though, that this could be key, and I think that it also depends on the outside area. If it's really starting to decline in that area, I feel like they should open up those areas and start there and then move on to the bigger cities like California, which have a higher and denser population total.
That's possible. I think if they were to start, it wouldn't have fans. Like, I know that. I think President Trump has talked about it. I'm not sure what he said. He said that he plans to try and reopen early, which doesn't look very plausible at the moment. But Dr. Anthony Fauci has said that if these leagues were to open up, it would be without any fans. And so a bunch of athletes, including most notably LeBron James, said that they're not going to play with no fans, which might not even be an option at this point. So what are you?
Going on to the President Trump thing to add, I heard he really wants to start the NFL season on time. So
that's
going to be his main goal, which can affect many other sports as well, as the NFL is going to take up TV time, fans, depending on how strong the virus is at that period. It's going to cause lots of problems for the other sports that are involved in that time period.
It's probably going to be a lot easier for the NFL than it is for other sports. The NBA and the NHL are probably in the worst spot right now in terms of this current season. They're probably not going to be able to finish their season. The MLB is greatly considering a shortened season, a lot, maybe like 50-ish games. And also the NBA and NHL are considering an expanded playoff bracket with like shorter series, like best of three maybe, or single elimination if they want to get a champion. The NFL is probably the most likely to start up on time, though. I have heard that social distancing could continue on until 2022, which is pretty crazy, which means for a while we might not get fans at these events.
Right, because in some areas of Europe, they're already starting to see some spikes in some areas of, like, Russia, I believe. And also to add to the MLB, they've actually considered this week to have all games in Arizona where their spring training facilities are, because there's a high volume of fields, and just have all the teams stay at like one location and almost like quarantine together. So do you think that could be a good possibility, or do you think that's out of the
I think it's possible. I'm not sure about their current resources, if they have enough for testing. I've heard that I think that they believe they do, which should be fine. I'm not sure what the general opinion on this. I know that Mike Trout in particular said that he doesn't like this idea, and he thinks that it's way too early to try something like this. And coming from a guy like Mike Trout, who obviously he's not a guy to say much for a guy of his caliber of player. He doesn't say much. He only talks when he strongly feels about something. And so for him to be speaking against it may say something that maybe he knows something that we don't about how well equipped MLB is to carry this out. I'm really not sure how this is going to go on. There's a lot of uncertainty right now.
Right, because they're going to be away from their families for a long time.
Yeah.
And especially if Mike Trout's saying this, this is going to bring other major players, and the MLB needs their best players to
get viewings
and all that. So
I'm not as well versed in baseball knowledge as you are, but Mike Trout is easily the most respected player in the league, I think. I think that goes without saying. He's been the best He's been the best player in the league for years, and for him to go against it could influence, as you said, a lot of other guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So back to Florida, what are your thoughts on them declaring sports as essential? Because
I was honestly surprised at first that they did this, but I see where they're coming from based on the economic gain and need Florida has for sports events, because they have so many.
They got
many
a lot
sports.
Of teams.
They have right, they have.
They have like three or four teams in each league.
Right. Throughout Florida, and it's a major tourism there, and they need the people to revamp it and just to start it up a little bit, start getting the venues ready and start getting everything, like start making employees have jobs again. Yeah. I see where they're coming from. I'm honestly surprised because I know there is a lot of travel, so I don't think it's going to do that well, and I know there won't be any fans, but still, there's going to be other groups of people that will be involved, and it'll start to – I just don't see it going to do too much right at this moment with how strict everyone else is being. I feel like they're going to get some
for sure
criticism if they continue it. So I don't know – wouldn't really love the situation, but I definitely see where they're coming from.
I mean, social distancing has definitely proven effective. We used this in the 1918 – a Spanish flu pandemic, and it helped save a lot of lives. But I think if they were to do something where they had all the games in like Florida or Arizona, like you said, all these players are going to be quarantined, and it's going to affect their personal lives very, very dramatically. I think if they want, if MLB or NBA or whatever wants this to happen, they'd really have to have an overwhelming majority of the players agree to this. Because I think there's no fans. That's out of the question. The main concern is the health of the players at this point, because they're the overwhelming majority of the attendance at these games. So they're going to need a large, large majority of the players to vote in favor of continuing the season in strict quarantine for this to happen. That's okay. I've also heard rumors, not sure if they're true, but I have heard rumors that NHL is considering a 24-team tournament to crown a champion, and I'm not sure where the tournament would be. My main thing with that idea is that out of all the big four sports, and soccer included, so the big four sports being basketball, football, baseball, and hockey I would say is the one in which players come into the most risk of spreading the virus, because hockey locker rooms are notoriously very cramped, very sweaty, and things can spread very easily. As like the 1918 flu, many hockey players ended up dying from that flu. So things can spread very easily in that environment. So what are your thoughts on the NHL's rumored idea?
I don't think it's going to happen as it can be. It's going to be similar to the MLB's idea. It's going to have to be in one city, and they're going to have all the stuff available. And if they're going to have to test everybody, or the tests always 100% reliable, like it puts a lot of people at risk, like you were saying, with the locker rooms. And also that sport has constant contact throughout the whole game with shoving, people cutting each other.
Yeah,
just
a lot of big hits.
Constant ways where people can get infected or spread the virus, unlike the MLB, which isn't as much of person-to-person contact. It's more of just bat to the ball, glove to the ball, and that's it.
I think even in the MLB, though, the spread of the virus has to be a big...
Right, I still don't think they should do it, because it's still too high of a chance right now.
Yeah, I think they need to be really, really sure that they have adequate resources to test every player and every attendee of the games. And if they can do that, that's great. But then even then, you're going to have to get the approval of most, or if not all, the players and coaches to do this. So I don't think there's going to be any way for things to start up in the near future. I think the earliest we can expect to see leagues start up again is midsummer, July or August.
Definitely.
We're going to need, like, social distancing hasn't been obviously the best enforced. People aren't always taking it seriously. That's going to have to change. We're going to need to decrease the spread of this virus. It's spreading at a rate unlike any pandemic in recent history. Even like H1N1, SARS, they didn't spread nearly this fast. The HIV/AIDS pandemic, it can't spread, couldn't spread as easily and quickly as this coronavirus. So that's something that needs to be at least lessened before we can decide to continue.
Definitely.
So I think we're ready to move on from that, right?
Okay, so we're going to continue with the MJ now, I believe, right?
The Michael Jordan documentary, yes. The Last Dance. It's airing in actually about 20 minutes from when we're recording this. 9 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN. The Last Dance is a documentary which is basically a compilation of footage, behind-the-scenes footage from Michael Jordan's last championship season with the Bulls from 1997 to 1998. And so this document, it's footage that's been kept away for, I believe, 23 years. Jordan's had control over this footage since after his that season ended. And after LeBron James and the Cavaliers beat the Warriors in the 2016 finals, he decided he wanted to release this documentary. And so it's been really hyped up. It's supposed to show the newer generation why Michael Jordan is the greatest player of all time. So what do you think about the hype on this and how it's going to turn out?
I think it's just going to relive Michael Jordan's legacy in the NBA, and how it's just going to revamp the vision and greatness he succeeded being on the Bulls twice as he retired to go to baseball for a few years in between his three championship ways. So I definitely think this is just going to revamp him being the GOAT. And I just feel like, and I say he's the GOAT because I personally feel like LeBron James needs a few more championships. And I don't think LeBron James would have been able to win three titles, go to baseball, and then win three more all straight. Like, that's one of the most unprecedented events in the NBA. So I just think this is going to show his legacy again and just bring back all the Michael Jordan memories of the 90s.
I'm going to be honest. I do think LeBron James is at least the best basketball player of all time. Maybe not the greatest in terms of legacy, because Jordan had his six championships and all that. But the thing is, Jordan's the most influential player to ever play, right? That's not up for debate. He changed the game. He globalized it. People still wear Jordan brand shoes today, which is absolutely unprecedented. He's the first and only NBA player to become a billionaire. But back to the unprecedented nature of him being able to win his three titles, come back and win another three, I think a lot of the credit, I haven't watched the documentary yet because it hasn't aired, but I think a lot of the credit beforehand goes to their coach, Phil Jackson. I think he doesn't receive as much credit as he needs to. I've watched a few of the games from back then. That his triangle offense, in which he has a guard, wing, and a big in the corner, I think that's how it was. And basically they're able to work together either in isolation or off pick and rolls in either corner side. I think that was huge in that era, where basketball was just starting to move from an era where it was just dominated by these big guys, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, into an era of skill. Not to say that these guys weren't skilled, but it became an era of planning, tactics, more so than just sheer brute athleticism and force. And I think Phil Jackson deserves a huge amount of credit. Another reason why Michael Jordan, actually before the season, said that he wouldn't come back after that final championship season was because Coach Phil Jackson said that he would not be returning either. So I think that's a huge thing that somewhat affects Jordan's legacy, is that people don't give enough credit to Phil Jackson. I think, right. Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. No, sorry.
I was going to say, Phil Jackson really helped the whole team gel together and work around Jordan to reach their full potentials and to have the most success and dominate each game and night. So I definitely see where you're coming from there, and I definitely agree with you that Phil Jackson should have deserved more credit, and I feel like we might even see this in this upcoming series about the close relationship MJ and Phil Jackson had together.
Yeah. We're going to see a lot of that. This is supposed to be the behind the scenes of that season. So apparently there was a lot of turmoil in the organization as compared to previous years, which is not something that you think of when you think those Bulls. You think that it was Pippen and Jordan, and for the latter part, Rodman, who were just going out there as like an absolute unit, just destroying every team in the league, when it really wasn't like that. There was a lot of dysfunctionality, a lot more than you would think in that team. And that's another huge thing that helps his legacy, is that he was able to go out and perform in spite of all of this. He was able to bring his teammates, Pippen, Rodman, together. I think that's a huge thing for him. I think LeBron James is the best basketball player to have ever lived. I think he's all around the best. He's a better passer than Jordan. He's a better passer than Jordan. He's more efficient than Jordan. Jordan did take more shots, that's obvious, and he also didn't play in an era in which the three-point shot was a big thing. He never took many threes. But I think LeBron's just better all around. He's a better playmaker. He makes the team around him better. And that's basically my opinion on it. I think LeBron, yes, his notoriously bad 3-win-6-loss finals record is a huge thing in this debate. But I think LeBron also didn't have the kind of help that Michael Jordan had with Hall of Famers at their peak, with Scottie Pippen, Phil Jackson, and Dennis Rodman. LeBron's got some very good teammates over the years, but I don't think any of them are at that sort of level. But this doc is really going to help us see, I think, how it was behind the scenes of that Chicago Bulls team and how Michael Jordan was.
I would say the closest team Jordan had to how LeBron's career has gone, for LeBron, I feel like that's going to be the Miami Heat. And he did win a few titles there, so that definitely makes him have more of a impact and seem even bigger. Because you are right how Jordan always had the big people involved that were very good for their position and for that team. So I definitely see what you're talking about, and I agree with you that you are making me lean a little towards LeBron, but because he at this day and age, he's a better all-around player, but I just feel Jordan's impact was much stronger, which makes me feel he's almost
I think that's fair.
Almost a bigger so
thing. He's definitely more influential. I think I've watched, like, during this quarantine, there's been no games on. So this NBA TV has been doing a lot of reruns of older games. And one thing I've got from watching many of these is that Jordan was ahead of his time like nobody else was. I'll give him that. Michael Jordan was incredibly ahead of his time. From the games I saw, at least, which was, like, mostly the 80s, we have Hakeem, Ralph Sampson, the Houston Rockets, Larry Bird and the Celtics, Magic, Kareem and the Lakers. My thing is that those games seem like they're very just – it's sort of just a duel, those games, just a physical duel where it's just two – both teams, like, it seems like, at least to me, almost all they're doing is just taking their biggest guys and just going straight at the other guys as close to the basket as they can and sort of just fighting them. I think Michael Jordan was the first guy who really brought a brand of skill that nobody had ever seen at the time. He had great handles for his time. He's almost invented ball fakes, really. He mastered the art of the ball fake. He did everything. He was physically gifted. He had an alleged 48-inch vertical, and he was also extremely skilled. He had great IQ. He knew how to play the game of basketball. And I think that's a big reason why you could convince me, at least, that Jordan is the greatest of all time.
Right.
So, I think, moving on from that, the NFL draft is, I believe, April 23rd to 25th.
Yes, I believe so.
And so, the top few teams, there's been a lot of trade speculation among the top couple picks between the Detroit Lions with the number 3 pick, the Miami Dolphins with the number 5 pick, the LA Chargers pick, more so than there has been, at least it seems, in the last few years. So, what do you make of the fact that these rebuilding teams at the bottom of the league are less looking to try and draft a franchise-altering player than to trade for assets and build up their team?
Yes, it's very unique, as we've seen how the Miami Dolphins and New England Patriots continue to rack up the picks. I feel like they're just trying to save up for one specific year that they feel that's going to be in mind. And then I feel like they're going to go all out. They're going to try to get exactly who the player they feel is like the next Hall of Famer. They're looking for the player who's going to take them to Super Bowls, and they're also looking for them to have a strong all-around roster before they make the final decision for the Hall of Famer, as I just feel like the Miami Dolphins are waiting for something specific, and they just haven't found it yet. Like, the past few years, Josh Rosen, he was a bust, and they tried it with him a little bit, but I feel like they're just searching and searching, and I feel like once they feel like they've found their guy, they're going to go all out and try to draft him, and hopefully they think they will lead him to winning Super Bowls and taking their franchise around.
You think that guy for these teams is Trevor Lawrence for next year?
I think he's going to be one of the best. He's going to be by far the best quarterback in that draft. So I definitely feel like
– is Justin Fields in that? To interrupt, but
it's Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. Those are the top two quarterbacks of that draft. And then we'll see some people like rise up when we get closer to the year's end.
Yeah.
But right now I feel like, and I still feel like Trevor Lawrence is at another level than Justin Fields. Just, he has the running ability. He has a good arm. He looks like a
feel for the game, I think.
Right.
He's got a really good feel for the game. Justin Fields, he's great, as much as I hate to say it as a Michigan fan. He's very good. But I think at some times, if a defense can play him right, he's going to get lost. He looked lost at times in the semifinal against Clemson. Trevor Lawrence, he's going to have his bad days, but I don't think he ever looks like that. Like, he's always going to make the next throw. He is a short memory, which is great for a quarterback.
Right, like when you consider the Ohio State game, he led a great charge in that game to go to the college championship. And although they were a little rusty in that game, we've seen so many great outings. I just feel like he's an NFL player playing in college right now. I saw him play Notre Dame in the college football playoffs a few years ago.
Yeah.
He's a freak on the field. He's bigger than anybody, and he's huge, and he's just so athletic. Yeah, he crushed Notre Dame.
And, Trevor Lawrence is great, but you said he looks like an NFL player in college. I think if I could ever give you one example of a guy who was literally an NFL player in college, it's got to be Joe Burrow. Like, his past season was absolutely insane. 60 touchdowns, which I believe is an FBS record. He set the SEC record in passing yards. And he was absolutely insane, and he came out of nowhere to do it.
Although he set so many records and had an unprecedented season, though, I do have some concern, though, because his first, 3 years, I believe, were just – he was the game. as he got shut out by LSU the year before. I mean, not LSU, Alabama the year before. And I just feel like this year he had the best line and the best O-line in college football, some of the best wide receiver group core in college football. And his defense was still amazing. So I feel like in this case, almost anybody could do just as good and probably not just as good, but I feel like anybody could have led them to the national championship.
That's true. For also Joe Burrow, I believe he's 23 years old, right? 23.
Yeah, correct. Think. Yeah, he's one of the he's much older than
most of the QBs players in this class.
Yes.
He's even older than their NFL MVP, Lamar Jackson. He's even older than he is. And I think that's another thing teams have to consider when it's going to be the Bengals probably who are going to get Joe Burrow. But that's another thing that they've got to be careful with when they're trying to build around him is that they have to realize they're not going to have as much time as they would have if they were to pick Justin Herbert or Tua Tagovailoa. Because in four or five years, Joe Burrow is going to be at his athletic prime. Like, they don't have much time. Tua, on the other hand, I forget how old he is. Let me check 1 second. Tua is 22 years old. He's a year younger than Joe Burrow, but that's still a great deal amount of time more that he has to prepare himself for NFL defenses to get used to it rather than Joe Burrow, who's going to be thrown into the mix and is going to be at his highest potential to perform very, very quickly.
Right. Speaking of Tua, multiple teams have failed him in his physicals. What do you think that has to do with his draft value? Like, do you think teams are going to bypass on him just because of those? Like,
it's possible. I mean, he just had that big injury against Mississippi State, which ended his season. That's the biggest concern with Tua is his injury history. He's been shown to be more injury prone than most of the quarterbacks in this class. And I think that's going to be a huge thing. As far as prospects go, I would think Tua is going to be the best quarterback in this draft class. There's a lot of concerns with him as there is with anyone. Obviously, injury history, his Wonderlic score, which was the lowest among all quarterbacks. But I think the Wonderlic score has to be taken with a grain of salt, especially in recent years. It hasn't been the greatest indicator of things. I think Lamar Jackson also had the lowest Wonderlic score of his class.
Yes, he did. He did.
Yeah. I think it's something – and Lamar Jackson, he's obviously doing just fine in the NFL. I think it's got to be something that people have to take very lightly. It's not as important, I don't think, as it once was. I think Tua has the tools to be something if he can stay on the field. That's my thing. I think teams are perfectly fine to consider not drafting him because of his injury history. That's a huge concern. We've seen quarterbacks in the NFL like Andrew Luck and Carson Wentz, who at least so far – or Luck was never able to live up to his full potential, and so far Wentz hasn't. He had that one MVP caliber season, and since then he hasn't been the same after a slew of injuries. I think that's a huge thing that teams have to take into account when they're looking at Tua especially.
Definitely, I agree. So who do you think is going to be the quarterback that fits in best with the new type of quarterback all the NFL teams are looking for, as the quarterbacks are starting to turn to the more dual threat, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Carson Wentz, Josh Allen type of quarterback, where they're able to throw on the run, throw in the pocket, and run in for large gains. Of those guys, who do you think is going to be the best match?
When you say those guys, do you mean Joe Burrow, Tua, and Justin Herbert?
I mean, basically, any of the first round picks, the top
projected
QB prospects. So, Justin Herbert, Tua Tagovailoa, Joe Burrow, Jordan Love. Of all those guys, who do you think is going to be the most accurate representation of a future?
The modern pro NFL quarterback.
The modern NFL quarterback.
I think I have to go with Tua, I think. Joe Burrow's excellent, but And Joe Burrow is also a very smart passer, I think. He's very – but that helps when you got the LSU receiver core and the LSU weapons that he has. I think Tua is going to be the best quarterback in the NFL. He's got a cannon of an arm. And that's – like, you've seen the most recent run of quarterbacks be guys with really, really good arms. Lamar Jackson, although he's – he runs a lot. Like, he runs more than any quarterback, like, pretty much ever. He's got a pretty good arm for such – like, you don't see running quarterbacks with such cannons. Lamar Jackson's got a pretty decent arm, I think. Patrick Mahomes might have the best arm in NFL history. Same with Josh Allen. Carson Wentz has a cannon. Dak Prescott doesn't have the best, but he can still throw pretty far. I think having a strong arm, just for whatever reason, is huge in today's NFL. And Tua, also, he's shown he can run the ball well. He's ran for 9 touchdowns in his college career. And he's had great running backs on his team, so he hasn't the ball that much. But he still had 9 touchdowns. I think Tua is going to end up being the best modern quarterback and overall quarterback of this draft class.
Yeah, I was going to say basically the same thing. My only concern with Tua and his running ability is the injuries have hampered him a little bit with the running. So that's my only concern. But I definitely think Tua is most likely the best quarterback in this draft for the future.
I think so. As for Jordan Love, I'm not too high on him because he had a lot of turnovers, if I'm not wrong, last year, if I can check his stats. And in
recent, I don't know if it was last. So sorry.
In recent years, quarterbacks who turn the ball over at like such a high rate in college aren't the best in the NFL. Like, he had 17 interceptions and 20 touchdowns, Jordan Love, in his last season. He was a lot better the year before, 32-6. But I just think that turnovers like that, I'm never a guy who's been huge on guys who can't protect the football, since that's so huge in today's NFL. We see, especially the older guys, actually, like Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees, who are very, very accurate with their passing. Don't see them throw many incompletions or interceptions. We've seen guys who are very turnover prone end up in bad spots as a result. We've seen Phillip Rivers, and more recently, in terms of prospects, Jameis Winston and Baker Mayfield so far haven't been able to, and Marcus Mariota haven't been able to quite live up to the hype, just because they're such turnover machines.
Right. After looking at Jordan Love's college stats, though, he actually had a coaching change midway through, which negatively affected his draft stock quite a bit because all his major statistics dropped. So I think if you have an NFL-minded coach who's able to work with the quarterback, though, he has the potential. Definitely not as high as, like, Tua, I would say, but he's going to – I think if he has a good coach with him that works with him and maybe he could be a solid starter for the future.
Yeah, I think so. I actually was unaware of that coaching change. I think if he can get somebody to get his turnovers under control, which for some reason he just threw 17 interceptions in 2019 after throwing 12 the past 2 years, I'm sure that change had an effect on that. If he can get someone who can play to his strengths, he's going to be a great quarterback, I think, for a long time. I don't think he has the potential of Joe Burrow or Justin Herbert or Tua, but I think he can be a solid starter, high-level starter.
Definitely.
All right, so in other news this week, NASCAR driver Kyle Larson was fired and dropped from his teams, I think, because of a racial slur during one of NASCAR's virtual series events. He unaware of the fact that he was on camera, he inadvertently used the N-word. So what are your thoughts on how this is going to affect NASCAR and its reputation?
This is going to hurt NASCAR and its diversity role, especially for the African-American fans, as they're going to feel a negative vibe with the sport, and because there's only one African-American NASCAR driver. And although this week he did feel Kyle Larson deserves a second chance and that Larson was very apologetic as soon as he said it and stuff, it's still going to have a major effect on just the diverse comfort that NASCAR will have as a vibe and overall feel, as this has been a, because this has been constant. As a few years ago, I believe another driver said the same word, and although NASCAR does have a strong, he was fired immediately, and they have a strong, what do you call it?
Anti-racist. I'm sorry.
Anti-racist program. They will still have an effect with this, and I just feel like they did the right thing by suspending him indefinitely with no pay and all that stuff for now. And I just feel like Kyle Larson's probably done for the year, but next year he'll probably have to work himself up, maybe go to a few like programs to show that he was willingly sorry. And
I think he's going through mandatory sensitivity training.
Right. I believe NASCAR puts them through that already, but I just feel like it's going to take a lot for them to get their fans back and feel like their sports, they're welcome with the sport. And I feel like it doesn't just hurt him, it hurts the whole sport.
Definitely, definitely. Moving on to the NBA draft, which is going to be in a few weeks, I think, or a few months. And more specifically, actually, the NCAA, as two of the top prospects for next college prospects for next year, number one, I believe, Jalen Green from Prolific Prep, and number 13, Isaiah Todd, who recently decommitted from Michigan. Both went on to sign with the NBA G League for, I think, a year before declaring for the NBA draft. In recent years, we've seen a bunch of prospects bypass the NCAA, such as LaMelo Ball, who went on to play in Australia, RJ Hampton, who played in New Zealand, Todd and Green, and also James Wiseman, who was who only played three games in Memphis before ending his season to prepare for the draft. This has got to be huge for the NCAA, and it's something they have to fix, because players are starting to notice that they're becoming very strict with their rules. Like Wiseman earlier this year was suspended for borrowing money from his coach, Penny Hardaway, to move in to his new home at the Memphis campus. I think this is a really bad look for the NCAA, as there's so much better alternative routes to the NBA than college, so where players can actually get paid before starting their professional careers.
Right. This is going to have a big impact on the NCAA and just how much excitement the NCAA has in basketball through March Madness and all this stuff. We aren't going to be able to see, if this continues, we aren't going to be able to see players like Zion Williamson, as those guys will start to go through the G League program and other various strategies to reach the draft in an alternative way.
Yeah.
That we're going to lose some of the top talents, which are the best to watch. And I just feel like this is going to have a huge impact on NCAA for views and many other economic strategies. It's going to hurt colleges, and as it's going to lower their gain. And I just feel like it can, I personally like the college route, but that's because I'm a fan, not a player, and I definitely see where these players are coming. So I feel like the NCAA is going to either have to start with new incentives for the players to start joining. I don't know if that's going to be money, like a small salary with that or not, just because of how much they make. But I definitely feel like the players are going to more and more continuously go to this new strategy if they don't.
I think the NCAA, it's in their best interest to at least have the players gain some sort of monetary profit from playing, because especially in basketball, they generate, I believe it's 75% of their revenue from March Madness, and the players get none. They get none of it. I think they deserve at least a small sum of money in turn for helping keep the NCAA as popular as it is. And if the NCAA keeps on like this, they're going to lose so many prospects. Like, Duke's big three from last year of Zion, RJ Barrett, and Cam Reddish, which got them right now the only real incentive you have to play in NCAA is if the program you're joining is especially known for player development, which could actually help as it may increase parity because these larger programs, which usually inherit like these top five recruits like Duke and Kentucky and UNC, are going to end up losing out on a lot of players. And at least for me as a Villanova fan, we have obviously Jay Wright's one of the best player development coaches in the nation. That's really great for us. But I think if the NCAA wants to benefit as a whole, they're going to have to start paying players a little bit.
Right. And it's not going to only impact the major colleges, as once Duke and all these other ones lose their – you're going to go for the other players who might just be a little lower talent that other – less known colleges receive, which is going to lower them. And then it's just going to be a chain reaction throughout the whole NCAA league.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're going to have to fix this fast. All right, so moving on. Are we moving on from that?
Sure.
All right, did you have anything to add?
I have nothing to add to that segment, no.
So I think we can move on to our This Day in Sports, which you said you had prepared some.
Yes. So in this day in sport, on this day in the sport world,
April 19th,
1897, the first Boston Marathon was won by John J. McDermott in 2 hours and 55 minutes and 10 seconds. Boston Marathon is the world's oldest annual marathon, and it was inspired by the success of the first marathon at the Olympics of
the year before,
1896. Another thing, right, the year before. Another thing is in 1900, the highest scoring opening day game was against the Phillies and Braves, where the Phillies beat the Braves 19-7 in 10 innings.
Back then, it was the Boston Braves, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, and obviously the Phillies have always been the Phillies. I can't think of the Phillies being from another city other than Philadelphia. That wouldn't make sense.
Right.
Yeah. Back to the marathon thing. I think 2 hours, 55 minutes. I'm no expert on marathon history, but for that time, that seems like really crazy because I'm not for sure on this, but I think times around then were around like 3 hour mark. So 2:55 is crazy. Obviously, we've come so far since then. I believe it was last year, which I think it was Eliud Kipchoge set a record with the fastest marathon. He was the first marathoner to come under the 2 hour mark. So we've obviously come out, which is 56 minutes faster than that time you mentioned. So we've obviously come a long way.
Right, but those were still unprecedented times at the era they were in with the technology and all the high-tech stuff.
The methods.
Athletes were available to. And right, the methods available. Just all those definitely have helped the current athletes today.
Yeah. So anything else?
Going back to the Braves game, the 19-17, that's actually very good for the time, as it was very difficult players weren't hitting home runs every day and stuff.
Yeah.
The fences were like 450 feet. Like, baseball was different back then, and that is actually very, very good to be 19-17.
If I'm not wrong, back then they didn't use like 100 balls a game like they do today. They had like a few balls and they would often get like really muddy and dirty. And so that'd make them harder to hit.
In this day and age, if a baseball has one small scuff on it, it's done. But it's done. In their period, like just everything around the ball got old, the ball got worn every game. And sometimes I bet they would even reuse the balls for other games. So.
Yeah,
it definitely hampered the ball and made it much more difficult to hit it hard and get solid good hits.
Yeah. So is that all for that segment?
Yes, that's all.
Moving on to our trivia segment. Last week, our event that we did our trivia on was the NCAA Final Four. And for this week, it's going to be the upcoming NFL draft. So you can go first with your question.
Okay. Who is the first ever draft pick in the NFL draft history? The first overall person in the first draft ever.
I believe that was by my Philadelphia Eagles. The pick was Steve Berwanger, I think.
I wrote down Jay Berwanger, but Jay Berwanger, selected by the Philadelphia Eagles in 1936.
And correct. He never played a game. He never played. Okay, so
that was the war, right, or whatever.
What was that?
Tell us more on why he never played a game.
I actually don't know. I'm not sure. I think back then they just didn't make enough money in that, and so he thought he could be more financially successful in another occupation.
Ah.
I think that's what it was.
But I was going to say war or something, because I know that's a brand new War II series, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So for this upcoming 2020 NFL draft, the number one projected pick – The number one projected pick – is obviously LSU quarterback Joe Burrow. He just won the Heisman. He broke, like, every record in existence. Who was the last LSU player to go number one overall in the draft?
So the last LSU player to go number one.
Yes.
Oh, let me think about that.
I can give you the year if you want.
Okay, yeah, year. Give me the year.
2007.
2007 NFL draft. Was it Jamarcus Russell, I believe? Was the first overall pick?
Yep, and I'm pretty sure Joe Burrow doesn't want his career to go that way.
So no. Didn't he overeat or whatever? And
he showed up to training camp overweight, I think. And right, one story.
He almost got lethargic almost and stuff.
Yeah, and one story from his first training camp, I think, is the Raiders coaches were convinced he wasn't watching the film they were sending him. So they sent him home with some blank tapes and told him to watch them. And the next day he came into practice saying that he'd watch that he'd learned on blitz packages.
I'd be very disappointed if that was my first.
That was one probably the main reason he ended up being such a notorious bust the way he did is because he did have the talent, I think. He just didn't attempt to earn his spot in the NFL at all, and he was out of the league pretty quickly.
Right, just because of the way he had – his drive wasn't there as he was getting out of shape and just – he was hurting himself tremendously, taking away all the success or opportunity of success he had.
Yeah. So your next question.
Okay, my second question is, what team has had the most first overall picks? It's two teams. They're tied.
Two teams. So.
And both teams have been in multiple cities.
My instinct guess would be the Browns. But first of all, you said two different cities, which they technically haven't, even though they relocated to Baltimore. I don't think it's the Browns just because I feel like every year it just seems like they end up getting such a high pick, but it's not the first pick until like the last few years when they won like one game in 2 years.
It's not the Browns.
I don't think it's the Browns. I'm going to guess the Cardinals is one of them.
Nope.
Oh, wow. Okay. Let me think. You said they've been in two different cities.
Both teams have been in two different cities.
Both teams.
I'll give you a hint. One came out with a new logo recently.
So that would have to be the Rams?
Correct. So St. Louis Rams / Los Angeles Rams.
And the other one would be the Raiders?
Nope.
The Chargers?
Nope.
Okay. I was thinking the Chargers aren't that.
Okay, like, this other team had a band. They were famous for their band.
I don't know. What is it?
It's the Baltimore / Indianapolis Colts.
Ah, the Colts. All right.
Yeah, and they both had the record is 7. They've been the first overall pick 7 times.
I wouldn't have guessed the Colts, but here's the thing that's like I've noticed with the Colts recently is that they've been consistently good most of the time, but whenever they're bad at like the perfect time. Like in 1988, they were coming off a few winning seasons, I think, and then they sucked, got the number one pick, and then ended up being Peyton Manning. And then in 2012, they had made the playoffs like every year of the decade or the century. Peyton Manning got hurt, they sucked, and then they got Andrew Luck. Like, they just seem to get bad at the right time.
Yeah, for sure.
So, this year, some mock drafts have the SEC getting as many as 15 draft picks in the first round, which would completely crush the all-time record for most draft picks by a conference in the first round. What is the record for most draft picks in the first round by a conference?
Is it 8?
No. It's more.
My close.
It's more? Yeah. And also, which conferences? 11. It's been 11. Done by two. Close, 12. But it's been 12? Done by two conferences.
I'm just going to guess the SEC is one.
Obviously. They did They did it in 2013 and 2017.
SEC and Big 12.
Not the Big 12.
No, Big 12, Big 10.
Not the Big 10. It's surprising.
Pac-12.
It's actually the ACC in 2006.
What?
When I did the research, I was pretty surprised. I think back then, though, Georgia Tech was pretty good.
Yeah, Georgia Tech was better than Clemson back then. So.
Georgia Tech was there. Miami was there. Miami was a dynasty.
Yeah. Okay, that makes more sense now.
Yeah, Florida State, I think they were decent back then. Clemson was all right. I don't think they were as great as they are now, or at least Florida State hasn't been good for a few years. But Clemson wasn't as good as it was now. But the whole
they had more
depth
teams still.
Yeah, they had 12 first round picks total.
Wow, I guess I was thinking a little too much about this current past few years. So
yeah.
Okay, right. For my third question is which college football team has had the most first-round picks in the NFL draft?
Ever?
Ever.
Okay, so I'm thinking it's one of four teams. It's either USC, Miami, Alabama, or Ohio State. I don't think it's Ohio State because they've only been, like, really, really good this past decade.
Okay, let me tell you something. You got, out of the top three, you got two of the teams right, not in the correct order. What's your order?
That wasn't in any order.
Okay, just out of the top three, two of the teams you mentioned are in the top three.
Okay, so I'm going to guess Alabama isn't in the top three.
Correct. Alabama is not.
They've just, with Nick Saban, they become a powerhouse. I'm going to guess number one is USC.
Yeah.
Number
with
two is Miami.
77 picks.
That's first round?
77 first-round picks is a USC player.
And number two is Miami.
No. This is going to surprise you. They hold one of the highest win percentages.
Michigan or Notre Dame?
No. You mentioned it earlier.
It's Alabama?
No.
Ohio State?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Ohio State has 67.
Dang.
And then number three is Notre Dame with 62.
Yeah, Notre Dame's been consistently good.
Yeah, the only thing with Notre Dame is they've never been like a national championship team, but they've always had.
I mean, they were up there two years ago. They made the playoff. They got smoked.
Right, but
they were.
Yeah, that's the problem. They have a hard time recruiting the top athletes and stuff because they aren't an SEC school and.
SEC, Clemson, and the Pac-12, and the Big Ten. Yeah.
But Notre Dame had 62.
That's not bad.
No.
So, for my last question, in the 2000 NFL draft, Tom Brady went off the board with the 199th pick, probably the greatest draft pick in NFL history, for a sixth-round pick to become the consensus greatest player to have ever lived, win six Super Bowls. Who was in that draft the last quarterback taken? He was taken at pick number 183, or last quarterback taken before Tom Brady. Yeah, he was picked at number 183, and he was chosen by the same team which had the number one pick that year.
So, I just read something about this where there was like six or seven before
Brady.
Can you give me a hint on the team?
Okay. When you think of failure, what team do you think of? It's pretty simple.
The Browns.
Yep. And so, who was the quarterback taken?
Ken Dorsey?
Nope. Do you want me to answer it?
No, give me a sec.
He's got a strange name. It's not a name I've ever heard anywhere else.
Wait, Ken Dorsey was like 2005, so that wouldn't have been it. Was it the dude from Yale or whatever?
I have no idea. I don't think so. Let me check.
Ty Detmer or whatever his name was?
It's not Ty Detmer.
Okay, you can just tell me.
Spurgeon Wynn.
I never would have guessed that.
S-P-E-R-G-O-N, Spurgeon, W-Y-N-N, Wynn.
What college was he from?
Let me check. Southwest Texas State.
I can't believe they.
I did not know that was an actual college.
I knew there was Southwest Oklahoma State or something like that, but
yeah, wow, that's gotta
that just shows how much Tom Brady was underrated and how much he took advantage of his opportunity and
The best coach
one of the greatest of all time.
And he went to Michigan, so go Blue.
Yep.
That's got to be painful to be a Browns fan. So they had the number one pick in that draft was Courtney Brown, a defensive end, and I don't think he lasted very long either. He's regarded as a major bust as well. So that was a rough year for the Browns.
It seems like they haven't hit on a good draft pick in years. Baker looked like one the first year, but right now I only see is Myles Garrett's been pretty good lately. And
Myles Garrett, if he can keep his emotions under control, he's going
to correct, yeah.
Yeah.
And then Nick Chubb's been pretty good. I don't think he was a second round pick, but
Nick Chubb was a good pick. Let's see if Baker pays off, the Browns could go somewhere, but that's a big if at the moment.
And Baker was a huge disappointment compared to him having Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry,
Chubb, Kareem Hunt.
I mean, that's one of the top running back and top two receiver duo in the league.
Definitely.
Like, maybe besides, like, Tampa, I don't know another team that's better.
I think Detroit's up there, but you could.
Oh, yeah, Detroit. They had Amendola, too.
They had Amendola, Jones, Galladay. There's not many teams that are as good, though, as that duo, and for them to let down the way they did. We'll see if the Browns can put it together, but right now it's not looking too great.
I mean, they did get Austin Hooper this year, and they're planning on drafting a top tackle in the draft, so they're going to fill some big holes, and
They have Kevin Zeitler, Joel Bitonio, who are both Pro Bowlers, I think. I think they have their new coach.
We'll just have to see how this – it's really about how it's run and how the coach – similar to how the MJ story was, how the coach can fix the organization and gel everyone together and bring out the most success.
Yeah. All right. I think that's going to bring us to the end.
Okay. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you for being
here. Thank you for listening.
Thank you all for listening. This has been the Gunpod and Godowski Sports Podcast.